so near is May. Just one more chance to make romance come true. How I wish you'd stay. I've words to say. Why hesitate to change a date or two? January, February, March are past. Time and love had passed me by. April then appeared. I lost my heart at last. An April fool, in love am I. Oh, April, give me one more. Little time and he'll be mine in May.
UMFM's annual funding drive is back, running from 6:30 p.m. on Friday, April 24th to 8 p.m. on Friday, May 1st. 1 week, one goal, one big push to support great radio at UMFM. We're trying to raise $34,000 this year, all of it going straight into the stuff that actually keeps the station alive. Not shiny extras, just the real deal, behind-the-scenes expenses that make UMFM happen. If the station's been a part of your day, on the bus, in the studio, in your kitchen, in your headphones while you're avoiding an assignment, this is the moment where tossing a few bucks our way actually matters. As always, we've got an assortment of new merch to say thank you, all with artwork by Brady Froze, who absolutely crushed it with two amazing designs. Or, as always, you can take a tax receipt. Totally your call. We're not picky. If you want to get ahead of things, hey, umfm.com/donate.pledgeorama. April 24th to May 1st. Friends, let's make this happen together.
Tu as 14 à 30 ans et tu veux créer une activité en français pour les jeunes de ta communauté? Avec le programme VIF, c'est possible. Tu peux recevoir 850 $ pour soutenir ton activité et l'organisme partenaire reçoit 150 $ pour appuyer. Passe à l'action et fais rayonner le français dans ta communauté. Visite programmevive.ca et dépose ta demande dès maintenant.
Have you any idea of the value of the instruments you've broken?
In actual equipment smashed and useless, I would say probably at least 6,000 quid.
You know? Now, why basically do you do this? Is it just to build excitement?
Well, when we first started, we were looking for ideas which were big musically and visually, and eventually we just started to smash it, and it went down so well that we've been doing it ever since.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5, broadcasting at 1200 watts from the University of Manitoba. Remember, no matter what your mother told you, smashing things is good.
Joining us is April Varner, a vocalist, lyricist, bandleader, and composer originally from Toledo, Ohio, now based in New York. She's received critical acclaim for her expressive technique and dynamic vocal range and won the International Ella Fitzgerald Jazz Vocal Competition back in 2023. She's played with artists such as Theo Bleckman, Kaylin Cardello, Chico Pinheiro, Ulysses Owens Jr., and the Sunhouse Singers, and her newest album, Ella, is currently out now. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Pretty okay. And I guess we should also mention this is being recorded in April. So
yeah, it is.
It does work with the theme. So I guess to start off with the question of all questions, what got you into music and by extension singing?
That's a good question. So I started singing when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I taught myself at first. I was really inspired by the Disney princesses, and I would learn or memorize their songs from the movies and sing them to myself in the bathtub. And that's when my parents first heard me singing and they were like, oh my gosh, you know, we got to get her into voice lessons. So, I was a classically trained vocalist. I started taking classical voice lessons at the University of Toledo, when I was 8 years old. And I have been singing ever since. I was classically trained. Opera was my path for a long time, until I got to college when stuff changed for me and I fell in love with jazz and discovered jazz, and, you know, the freedom it gave me was so like new and exciting compared to opera that, you know, changed my major, changed my career path. And here we are 10 years later after that, pursuing jazz in New York City. So
yeah, jazz will do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about the fact that like you were really into classical, like you were like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. hell or high water. I'm going to, you know, sing opera till I die.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. My nanny, my grandmother was a classical pianist. So I was a classical pianist as well. So, mm-hmm. She was the only other musician in my family. My parents sing in a church choir. But in terms of like trained musicians, my nanny was really the only one besides me. So yeah, classical music was the only thing we were listening to, you know? Yeah. So jazz was not really in the picture at all growing up.
Yeah. Same for me. Like my dad got me hooked on like, you know, classical CDs, and we like collect them like we've like from 50 or 60. And then I was like really obsessed with Beethoven. Like I brought a Chopin CD to show and tell. Like, aww. I dressed up for Beethoven and for Halloween, and I threw a tantrum because there were spiders in the wig and stuff.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's
cute. And it's like, you know, there's so much great classical recording. So like who do you listen to like as an opera singer initially? Like what classical recordings really spoke to you?
I mean, I didn't, truth be told, I didn't really listen to a whole lot of like opera music, really, because I was so young, I didn't really understand it. Yeah. But I did do a lot of like, I played on piano a lot of Chopin pieces and some Beethoven, and nice. So those and Bach, those were like my three favorites to play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, singing though, like I was so early in my opera training that I didn't really like have favorite operas or like arias, for example.
Yeah.
I was kind of getting into that when I was in college, my freshman year, as a vocal performance major. So that's when I was starting to, and then that's when I kind of fell out of love with opera. So,
yeah.
So I wasn't really listening to a ton of it. I would just say like in the background, like instrumental classical music was played in my house and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Nice. Yeah. I guess, nowadays, what would you say, like kind of, if you were to pick one, what would you say? Like, oh, like I could listen to this back and say, oh, like I like this as an opera.
Like an opera?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say Carmen is one of my favorite shows. I mean, it's just, you know, that one's just like so fun to listen to every time. So I would say that one. That one's one of my favorites. And La Boheme as well.
Right.
Beautiful music. So
yeah,
I definitely still hold a deep appreciation for it, for sure. And like one of my best friends is an opera singer, and I sing in a church choir every Sunday on the Upper West Side. So I can still like sing, you know, or use that side of my voice every week, which is nice. So
yeah, exactly. And you can kind of go back to the technique and stuff. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of what led you to jazz?
So I went to Indiana University for my undergrad, and I was in a show choir there called the Singing Hoosiers, and it's about 90 plus members. And it's composed of, you know, any major. So people from the business school, the science school, the music school, like it was an amalgamation of a bunch of people. And within the group, there was a vocal jazz ensemble, and like two per part. And I, for some reason, got thrown into it. It wasn't like an audition process. It was just, they just picked people from the choir to do it. And I was not into it at all. At first I was kind of upset about it because I didn't like jazz at all. I really thought it was really boring music. You know, there was no like reason for that. I just had this preconceived notion of what I thought jazz was and sounded. So I just was not into being in this group at all. But long story short, the assistant director of the group came to me one day. He was like, you really have a voice for this kind of music. Like your voice is so suited for jazz. Like this is what you should be doing. And I remember I laughed. I was like, yeah, right. No way. Never. And then it came to a point where my opera teacher, her name is Jane Dutton. She's phenomenal. She said to me in a lesson, she was like, okay, you know, since you're an opera major, you have to be an opera chorus. Like that's just a requirement. So you're not going to have time to do Singing Hoosiers anymore. And I was devastated. I was like, absolutely. And that's kind of when it clicked for me. I was like, wait a minute. I actually really enjoy this. Why is that? And I decided to lean in more in this little vocal jazz group. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess. I just loved the freedom, like I mentioned, that it gave me. It was so new and exciting. And I actually ended up directing that group then for many years after that. So it all, funny enough, worked out. And I told my parents towards the end of my freshman year that I wanted to change my major. They were thrilled. And, you know, so they didn't have to sit through an opera anymore. But yeah, so funny how it worked out.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you speak about freedom, do you mean like the freedom of like kind of exploring the texture of your voice, like in a different context?
Yeah. In like so many ways, like phrasing, being able to do what I want with phrasing. Obviously improvisation was unheard of to me. You know, the only real freedom you get in an aria is if there's like a recitative or like a cadenza or something, you know, everything's so written out, you don't really get to choose what you sing or how you sing it, I guess. So that was cool to see. It definitely was a complete learning curve, though. It was quite the game of catch up for me with my classmates, because I knew absolutely nothing about jazz when I changed my major. So it was a bit stressful. I added on a fifth year to finish, you know, to give myself a little bit of a break. But I mean, I would say mostly the freedom of phrasing was the thing that I liked the most and wanted to lean into. So.
Yeah, and then it's like you can look at tone differently, like kind of clarity, like diction and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like in terms of that, like who'd you say would be like your influences in terms of singers? Like who would you say you gravitate to and kind of match with your voice?
Well, I would say it's a tie between Ella and Carmen McRae. Harmon, I studied with Sasha Vasadani at IU and Tierney Sutton for a year as well. But Sasha gave me an assignment. He was like, I want you to really deep dive study Carmen. Yeah. I want you to learn, you know, because I think she of that era of vocalists, frankly, has the most unique voice because it's very like speak singy. It's like very, her diction is so crisp on every single word. And I just really liked that. So I definitely studied her a lot. And I think I definitely emulate her, I would say maybe the most next to Ella, in terms of how I phrase. And, you know, what was good about classical training is diction is like the number one thing they teach you. And so my diction has been great, because of that training. So, and then with someone like Carmen who leans into the diction, that just kind of like naturally, fell into my voice. So, I would say definitely a tie between Ella and Carmen, but then also with the vibrato side, Nancy Wilson doesn't ever back with her big vibrato, which I loved. Yeah. I sometimes got told by not very jazz trained professors that I should cut my vibrato or like limit it, which really made me mad because I'm like, no, look at someone like Nancy Wilson or Dinah or whoever, like they don't hold back on their vibrato. Like that's not really a thing. So yeah, those three are my biggest inspirations for sure. Mm.
Yeah. I saw you also mentioned, Eva Cassidy as well in an interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Sasha got me hip to her as well. She was amazing, taken far too soon. She had such a beautiful voice, and I guess like, I also love country music being from the Midwest. So like, hearing her do like the folk arrangements and her playing guitar and bass or whatever she played. I mean, she was so talented. So like a different side of jazz, I guess, was, you know, I loved listening to her and her music. So.
Yeah, definitely. Like there's like so many different textural things, like with genre, like, you know, Glenn Campbell and like, you know, Madison Cunningham, like a huge Madison Cunningham.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, definitely. Even like Michelle Legrand is a different thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of stuff. So in terms of like all that stuff, like how do you kind of switch between treating the voice as like a muscle versus like a method of expression? Like, is it hard to switch between the two as like, you know, starting from classical to jazz and all that kind of focus on, you know, all those different singers, especially when you're considering, you know, breath control, jaw movement, you know, et cetera.
I would say actually it isn't too bad. There was a point obviously when I was learning jazz that I had to kind of learn what the jazz voice sounded like,
right.
You know, but I would say because of my classical training, I have a really good like mix between my head voice and chest voice. I can transition pretty seamlessly now between the two, which is great. But I would say like, they're kind of two different muscles. So, like the classical placement I have kind of always on reserve, like on Sundays when I sing, that's how I sing for the whole mass and like with our choir and like all the classical pieces we do. And most everyone in the choir is an opera singer. So it's nice to keep that muscle fresh. And then I think I've gotten to a point now where I can quickly switch between the two with ease. But you know, when I was learning jazz, it was definitely not that way. It was very difficult to not, you know, lift the soft palate and like put it, you know, back here for the opera. Cause I was a high soprano when I sing opera, but then when I sing jazz, I'm more of, you know, my speaking voice is obviously very low. So when I'm singing jazz, I tend to sing lower. So it's nice to have both to keep my range wide as well. Right. So it's nice, you know, when I'm improvising in jazz, I can switch if I want to the opera placement and get the really high notes, which is fun. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of become muscle memory now for me, which is which, but obviously that took a lot of time to achieve.
Yeah. That tracks. Cause like your vocal technique is pretty crazy. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know, like you, like even like just hearing you phrase like melodies and stuff, like, like a lot of work went into it. So it's really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And like in terms of like phrasing, in terms of like listening to records and listening to different standards and stuff, like how much do you think about like different recordings and like when you want to play a different like arrangement of a tune? Like, is it like a very muscle memory thing at this point? Like for singers especially, or?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as a singer, it's easy to fall into the trap of like imitation strictly, like sounding like a carbon copy of somebody is easy to do. But you know, there's the skill that takes time too, of like, okay, I listen to Ella, I listen to Carmen, I pick up little things that they do, little nuances that they do, so that I have those when I'm singing a standard, you know. And I usually try to keep my sets pretty much the same for each show. Once I have like a set group of arrangements, so then it becomes like, okay, I don't want to sing these the same way at every show, obviously, right. You know? So then it becomes like, okay, I know these little nuances. I have these in my back pocket of recordings that I've listened to 1,000 times of Ella and Carmen and Nancy or whoever. So then it just becomes picking from my arsenal, I guess, of, you know, how do I want to say this phrase, or how do I want to, you know, do this? Or, you know, there's some songs, like, for example, every time I sing Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most, I always think of Carmen's version of that. And there's little phrases that I always kind of, I guess, imitate that she does on that song, just because it's like so good. Yeah. So, you know, that won't get me in jazz jail of like, you know, copying how she sings a certain phrase in a certain song. But, you know, I always try to be authentic to myself and not sound like, oh, she's imitating Ella, or, oh, she's just copying, you know, because I never want to be that singer that people hear and think I'm just like a, you know, machine just copying. So, it's just a matter of just collecting, like you listen to language, bebop language from an instrumentalist. It's the same thing for singers, listening to how a singer sings a song and just taking little notes of how they do things and then putting it all into yourself, you know?
Yeah. I guess it depends on how much you think about it, because like sometimes you can get like voicing paranoia, where it's like, you know, how much am I supposed to, you know, like embellish this voicing? It's like, you know, drop twos or switch to, you know, Fred Hurst stuff. And it's like, how, like, you can't really think about it. You have to like just have to, you know, think about it horizontally. You know, speaking of which, you know, you've got a new album out called Ella. So what can you tell me about it?
Yeah. So this was a fun one to make for sure. I mean, Ella was the first person I kind of listened to when I was transitioning from opera. So, you know, she's called the first lady of song for a reason. I mean, she's like the token jazz vocalist for sure. So she was always very inspiring to me, especially when I was learning how to improvise. And so, you know, winning the 2023 Ella competition was unexpected, but awesome. So I kind of always knew I wanted to do a project about her. And originally this, you know, when I was talking with Ulysses, who produced this one, you know, he's like one of my best mentors and sounding boards for everything. So any project idea I have, I go to him, and we were talking about it. And we originally planned to do an Ella and Frank tribute album combined. Yeah. One, because Frank Sinatra was also a person that I kind of gravitated to when I was learning jazz. And so, you know, the big band tracks on the Ella album were originally the Frank tunes. The Frank stuff was going to be the big band stuff. The Ella stuff was going to be just the trio. Then, you know, as we were nearing the end, like once we had everything recorded, we had like 8 Frank songs, 8 Ella songs. It was a lot of music. But once we had it all done, we were like, you know what? You know, he mentioned the competition. He was like, I think Ella's more of an inspiration to you, and I think it would resonate more with the people since you won the competition that you strictly about Ella. So we were like, okay. So then we looked up which of the big band Frank songs Ella sung, because we wanted to make sure that they were in her wheelhouse. And the only one that wasn't was I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night. But because it was a mashup, we're like, all right, whatever, it's fine. She sang in the wee small hours. So it worked out. But I actually loved how it worked out, because I like having both the big band stuff and the trio, on the album. So it kind of is a nice texture change. So yeah, I do have a bunch of Frank songs in the back pocket for maybe a later release, of a Frank album. I don't know. But yeah, so it definitely was a cool thing to do. And you know, these are all standards that everyone knows and loves, and people that were alive when Ella was alive, can probably recall hearing her sing those songs at shows if they went and saw her. So it was a nice difference from my first album, which was, oh Lord, sorry. Ah, hang up. Sorry about that.
Okay.
It was a nice difference from my first album where I had the more niche April repertoire. So this was a more like standards record. So which was also fun to do. So yeah, it was a great project. Everyone involved is so talented and I'm so grateful to have everyone be a part of it. So
Yeah.
yeah, a
And
lot
I
of
feel
fun.
like you can kind of play with the audience's expectations a bit, because with April, like, everyone was like, oh, it's just, oh, no, tunes with April in it. Oh boy. And you listen to it and it's like there's a bunch of different varieties and texture and stuff. Whereas like, you're doing an Ella tribute album and it's like, oh, okay. And then you listen to it and it's like, you're not just doing a pastiche, you're singing it the way you would just sing it.
Right,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. In terms of like, I guess the tunes, were you consciously thinking of like emulating the kind of impact of her singing style, like her phrasing throughout the record? Or are you thinking about them as like separate tunes?
I know that like anytime someone does a tribute record, they can fall into a rut of
Right.
like carbon copying, like we mentioned. So I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted these to be fresh interpretations, my interpretation of these songs, that kept people interested too. Because if the first song, Tisket a Tasket, sounded just like, excuse me, just like Ella's, then people would be like, oh, pff, this is just another singer singing in about Ella, blah blah blah. But I wanted, and that's kind of why I got Emmett involved, because anytime we've had him, by we I mean Meanulistis, anytime we've had him on a project, like with my winter albums as well, like we don't even tell him anything beforehand. We just tell him the tunes, the keys, and then we get there and he just comes up with his arrangements on the spot and they're amazing. So I knew that with him on board that we'd have a fresh take on these songs, and lo and behold, we did. And then same with Brian Lynch for the big band stuff. I gave him a few notes of what I wanted, and then he just again ran with it and did an amazing job. So thankfully, because I who I had on board, it made my job a lot easier to get these fresh interpretations. But I was thinking, like, for example, the Mr. Paganini, that song gave me such a headache to do. That was my God, that was just, it's such a long song and it's very physically taxing. So that one I wanted to kind of like make more sound like Ella with the little scat breaks that there are in that one. But again, my biggest goal was to make this not like every other tribute album out there. I wanted fresh, modern takes on these tunes, which I think I achieved well, thankfully. So,
Yeah, because I think if someone was like, we were to compare them, like I feel like the textures would be different enough, like the way you arranged like the tunes and stuff, like compared to the other, like a Tisket a Tasket, like she's kind of, it's more of a nur she's doing it more of like in a nursery rhyme kind of vibe, whereas like you kind of lean into like Latin inspiration or like Night and Day or Cheek to Cheek, like it's more sparse, yeah. You described the New York scene as a dumpster fire hellscape, as I recall.
The dating scene, yes. The
Yeah,
dating
the
scene.
dings.
The dating scene here, yes. I would say that's still accurate.
Yeah, is it really that bad?
It's just there's so many people in the city, and that makes it harder because everyone
Everyone's a
has,
character.
yeah, that, and then everyone gets bored so easily, and then they
Right.
want something, the grass is always greener in the city to everybody, so that makes it a little difficult.
Yeah.
There's just too many options, I guess. So,
Yeah. One person's trash is another person's treasure, I suppose. Yeah. But it also gives you lyric pathos for Undecided.
There's ample songwriting
Angst.
there's material to work with for
Yeah,
sure.
exactly. I feel like I could kind of tell like there was a bit of like kind of a subtle influence like to Ella, I guess, when you're like the ends of phrases, I guess. So was that something you were thinking of, or am I completely off?
No, I think you're right on that. I think my vibrato I've kind of morphed to sound a little bit like hers. But again, I've listened to her so much over the past 10 years that like it's just kind of like you mentioned muscle memory for me. So yeah, I would say that that's yeah, I would say that's accurate.
And then in terms of like picking the tunes, did you also kind of reference like, I guess, a recording history as well, like when picking tunes?
I mean, I looked at when I, you know, since it was first an Ella and Frank album, I looked up on Spotify because it tells you how many streams certain songs get. I looked at what the most popular songs were. That's kind of how I narrowed down the list. You know, so, and these were also some songs like Night and Day, for example, Cheek to Cheek. Those were songs, Got You Under My Skin, that I've sung myself for many, many years. So that you know, I knew that those were popular songs, but you know, Mr. Paganini, A Tis Good a Task It, Undecided, like those were ones that I hadn't really heard much before, but then I looked at the numbers and saw that they were pretty popular. So that's kind of how we narrowed down the list was what are the most popular songs that people have listened to from her, that they would easily recognize. So.
And so you can kind of like the shrewdness of that decision, you can kind of, make it more musical later on, so it balances out.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of, like, you've worked with like a variety of, legends, like you mentioned, like Ulysses Owens Jr., like Russell Malone, like Emma Cohen, Theo Blackman, like a bunch I didn't mention. So like beyond like their name recognition, like can you describe some moments in their playing or even on the record that really resonated with you?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, like I mentioned, Emmett, I can't speak highly enough of his playing. It's just ridiculous, you know, and his ability to just come up with these arrangements on the spot is crazy to me because I know how hard being a classical pianist, I know how hard jazz piano is for me. So just hear him, he makes it sound so easy, which I know it's not. So his creative ideas are really inspiring too. So he's just a fun person to work with. You know, to play off of, to sing with is just a blast. And Ulysses, again, can't speak highly enough of him. He's just been such an important mentor to me. And you know, he goes to bat for me on so many different occasions without me even having to ask him to, which I'm really grateful for. And his playing, of course, is speaks for itself. And then yes, another dear mentor is Theo Bleckman. He was my teacher when I was at MSM for grad school. And I just was at his house last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and we were just hanging out and having coffee and chatting. And he's just a lovely person to talk to about anything. And again, I learned so much about, you know, songwriting and phrasing and everything from him. So he and Ulysses are definitely, and Sasha too, like those three are invaluable mentors to me. And have introduced me to people like Russell, because Ulysses got him for my last record, which ended up being his last record, which is really special. So he was a lovely soul to work with, and obviously a living legend. So yeah, all of these people in my corner have introduced me to such incredible musicians and opened so many doors for me. So yeah, I'm super grateful to all of them. So.
Yeah, they seem like pretty like, grateful and like like helpful, I guess. Is it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They seem very down to earth, I guess what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes. Very kind people, which is important in this business to have.
Oh, also, in terms of the lyric writing of the tunes you picked for the record, what lyrics were you the most excited to sing?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think A Tis Good a Task It is always fun to sing because the lyrics are really cute. And then Undecided, of course, is fun to play with in terms of the story of it. So I would say those two are probably my favorite. But, you know, also getting to sing the verse of Night and Day and kind of mess with that and the intro and outro of that arrangement was fun. Yeah, I would say Undecided is probably the one I have the most fun on when I sing it on gigs because people laugh at the lyrics. So.
Yeah, and then you can kind of like, it's a good album ender, especially after all
Yeah,
the years.
of course.
And since you studied with Theo Blackman, like, did you learn anything about like, because I guess when I listen to him, he kind of has like a ECM sound. like Ben Maunder and stuff. So like, really stretches out phrasing and
His range is ridiculous. I always just can't believe how low and high he can sing. It's crazy. Yeah. Anytime I can get him on one of these projects, like with the Winter Songs and April album, of course we had him on a song. So anytime I can use him and sing with him, it's just amazing. But yeah, in our lessons, I remember he would have me kind of try to do some of the ECM more avant-garde stuff as exercises. And it was so uncomfortable for me because I do not sing like that really at all.
Yeah.
But it was really cool to have a teacher teach me that and to have that, I guess, in my back pocket if I ever decided to go that route, which I doubt. But I mean, you know, it's cool to have the knowledge of. But he mostly helped me a lot with songwriting. And still kind of encourages me to do that. It's not my favorite thing in the world to do, write music, but I know I should do more of it. I'm just kind of get a little lazy, to be honest. but he was really inspiring with the writing and, you know, stretching my voice and my range and taking risks with phrasing, especially because he always does in his music. So he's amazing.
Yeah. Especially the stuff with Ben Maunder, like, oh man.
Ridiculous,
crazy. But that's that kind of like stretching out. I could kind of hear that a bit with your EP you released, Hummingbird,
because it's a lot
different from your other stuff.
That was a lot of stuff that we had workshopped together in my lessons and my time at MSM. It's listen to that now and see how different my voice sounds. What was that like? Yeah, that was 2022. Those were all my classmates on that from MSM. So that was nice. That was a fun little first project to put out into the world. But it's funny to listen to now.
Yeah, the album art is really cool. It's kind of like a
thank you. Yeah, my one of my classmates, Mim, she was another vocalist in our program. She did like graphic design, so I had her design that. Yeah, she did a great job. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Nice. And the green highlights is really cool, and it's like a grayish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. She did a great job.
Yeah. Who did the album art for Ella?
So it's a guy named Alan Mezquita. I have a group of musicians out in LA who are friends of mine, Alex Frank, Graham Dechter, and
Graham Dechter, nice.
Yeah, Ryan Shaw. They're three of my buddies, and they had Alan design their one of their album covers, and I remember seeing it and I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. So I reached out to them and I was like, who did your art for that? Because I, you know, I had my photo as the April album, which you can see literally right there. So I was like, oh, it'd be cool to do like a little doodle, like something different than just a picture of me for this Ella one. So he did. I reached out to him and he was on board and did a great job. I mean, I'm obsessed with it, and the colors, it's so colorful and fun. He did an amazing job.
Yeah. I can't place where the cartoon, like the anime, like I guess the color art is from. It's not like Art Deco, but it's like 1930s. And
I think I Dream of Jeannie was like the inspiration for my little doodle. At least that's what I interpret it as. I'm not sure if it's his inspiration, but it's, I love what he did with it. He did a great job.
Yeah, it's great. And you've also played with like quite a bit of piano players, you know, Tyler Henderson, Luther Allison, Kaylin Cardello. So like what voicings or like what voice leadings do you gravitate to as a vocalist with the rhythm sections you play with? Like what about their playing resonates with you?
Good question. Kaylin's playing was incredible. He's so talented for my first album, but then I've been playing a great deal with William Hill III now. He's killing. He's really up and coming on the scene, young cat. And he has a lot of Oscar Peterson in his playing, which I love, obviously, because that was big in the Ella era. Of playing with her. So I think that's kind of the style that I like. There's other pianists I work with who are a little more avant-garde, and, you know, which is great. Not really my like favorite sound with my style of singing, but so I would say more like the Bill Evans, Oscar Peterson stuff is like my my mojo. I love that style. And Luther is amazing. Joe Block's amazing. Like, so much, there's so many killing pianists on the scene. It's you know, and Tyler, of course. I'm very spoiled with my friends that are so good at what they do. But I would say, yeah, the Oscar Peterson style is kind of my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
There's one other guy. What is his name? Gabe Schillinger.
Oh, Hyman. Gabe Schillinger, yeah. Hyman. Yeah. Oh, I adore Gabe. Him and his brother Eitan. I went to MSM with Gabe.
Oh, nice.
And for many, 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 many years. Yeah. So he's. I just played with him on Wednesday in Blues Alley in DC. Nice. With him and Eitan. Yeah, he's such a sweetheart too. He's just a lovely person and very talented as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I see like those piano videos he posts, like with the Barry Harris voicings and Block Boys.
Yeah, he does like the jazz lick of the day, or not jazz lick, jazz tip of the day. That's it, yeah. Jazz tip of the day. And yeah, he definitely leans into the Barry Harris stuff. Who was obviously at MSM, so that's kind of where we were taught in our piano class. It was a lot of Barry Harris voicings and technique. Yeah,
nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess there, back then people would want to go to the, you know, the Barry Harris school when he was teaching and stuff. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you've done quite a bit of transcribing. So, you know, how did that kind of start?
So that was, I didn't expect anything from that when I started doing that. I mean, I really, like the first video that blew up that started it all, the Cannonball, I'll remember April.
Yeah.
Solo I did that. I solely did that because I had the April album coming out and I wanted to do like a song from the album in a different way and like start to promote it. So that's the only reason I looked that solo up and learned it, was to be like a poster promo for my album.
Right.
Obviously not expecting it to get 1.5 million views, like no way expected that. And it wasn't like a project that I wanted to start doing like transcribing either. It was simply just what video can I do to like promote the album? So,
right.
And here we are with close to almost 100,000 followers, which is insane, of doing these silly solos. So it's been fun though. It's definitely helped my improvisation a lot.
Kidding.
A lot of language that I've accumulated. And it's fun practice, cause I'm not the best at practicing. So these are like fun little, I guess, projects for me to do and post. And people enjoy them, obviously. So that's a win-win. And I've met so many people at my shows who say they've seen me on Instagram or they found me on Instagram and, you know, came from far away to hear me and, you know, which is really cool. So the internet is definitely a special place, and social media has become such a big, like, platform of promotion now for artists, which is a good, bad thing. And, you know, it's so dependent on, like, clubs are so depending on your numbers now of social media to hire you. Yeah. And like some competitions I've done, like, or looked into or whatever, they ask for your social media handles and stuff. Or,
oh God.
You know, I know some labels even are like depending on how big of a following you have online. So like I mean, growing up without social media and like seeing the rise of it, I think it's a good, bad thing. But yeah. Talent really kind of almost takes a back seat now to following, which I have mixed feelings about, but I guess for my own sake, the notoriety I've gotten from Instagram is great. And I, again, did not expect it or plan on that being the case at all. It was just something fun for me to try. And here we are with a lot of people on my page. So,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, do you pick the scat syllables based on the amount of articulation attack for each note for like a solo, or is it by instrument? Like,
to be honest, I don't really think about it too much. I try to do B's and D's. That's kind of what I was taught to do. Anything else kind of trips you up, especially when you're doing like very fast stuff. So yep. I've kind of just gotten the muscle memory of B's and D's because it's easy to spit out really fast. But, you know, obviously listening to Ella, I've kind of adopted what syllable she's done. And, you know, the less complicated you make it, the better. In terms of like what consonants you say and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, because like you've transcribed like a ton of crazy stuff. Like, and you just, it seems like it comes out so easily. Like, you know,
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's like I said, it's helped me a lot. Definitely. It's right. helped. I've gotten better the more I've done it, which is what practice does. Crazy. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's become fun to do more challenging ones for sure, for both for people and for myself as well.
Yeah. Cause like you've done, you know, Caravan, Mr. PC, Giant Steps, like, oh yeah. And there was the Pat Metheny one you did. That was really
yeah,
nice.
That one was for my my April album, The Joy right. of April, April Joy. Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was Pat Metheny's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I love doing his stuff.
Yeah, and like, is it tricky for some like people where it's like they have like you know, they might going this way of their lines, and all of a sudden they might go to like 16th notes and trying to figure that out as in terms of a voice? Because even like transcribing guitar on piano, I find that very hard.
Piano. I'm not going to fuss with piano is it's impossible to sing because, you know, there's chords. I can't sing chords. So unless it's like a single line on a right hand or something, I can't really do vocalists can't really do piano solos that well. I would say saxophone is my favorite to transcribe because the range is really easy for my voice. Uh-huh. And I guess trumpet depending on the range. I tend to do more sax than trumpet, but I've kind of been trying to do more trumpet lately to get the high notes stretched. And you know, guitar isn't bad either, but guitar kind of falls into piano too, with like the chords and comping and stuff. It's just really hard to like repeat. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mostly horn solos are good, and vocal solos, of course, but
yeah. Do you just kind of pick them based on like, you know, recordings you've listened to, like,
yeah. Or like, yeah. You know, I love Cannonball. I love how melodic he is. And, Dexter Gordon's another favorite, Lester Young, you know, Lee Morgan, I've done a bit of, him young is just insane. Pat Metheny, I'm trying to do more of. So, I have my select few that I kind of pick from, or Miles, of course. So Charlie Parker, nice. But I have my favorites that I kind of gravitate towards.
Yeah.
So
which ones have been your favorite to like dissect, like later on, like take lines from and kind of incorporate into your improv?
I would say probably Cannonball. I kind of like the most, cause again, he's very melodic.
Yeah.
His lines aren't super complicated. They follow, like I can kind of predict almost where he's going to go when I'm learning one. Mm-hmm. He outlines the chords pretty vocally, I would say, vocal friendly. It's not a super like jumpy style, so that's kind of nice to learn how to, like with my own improvisation, learn how to do that, like make my solos more like singable,
right,
almost. So I would say he's probably the one I enjoy most, and Dexter. He and Dexter kind of have that same melodic style, which is cool.
Yeah.
And easy.
Have you ever had any solos where it's like you start singing and it's like, I can't do this right now, I've got to like
yeah, there's been anytime I try to do like a super avant-garde one, it's just like, all right, this is not gonna happen. I'm trying to think if there were any in particular. I can't think of any right now, but yeah, there's definitely been moments where, you know, like Miles or who was it that I'm thinking of? Oh, the names are escaping me right now. But basically anytime I tried to do like a more avant-garde album or something that is just like, you know, super jumpy 16th, 30 second notes, I'm like, I can't sing this. Like, yeah. It's never going to happen unless I slow it way down.
Right.
The voice can't make those jumps cleanly.
Yeah.
Really. Like a horn can. So yeah, there's definitely been some that I've abandoned because it's just like, this is too hard. So but yeah. I try, but it
right.
most often doesn't work out.
Yeah. By avant-garde, what are you like referring to? You mean like
just like the not really Miles. God, what is his name? They're escaping me. Wow. I can see his name. I just can't think of it right now. Just like the super, super free jazz. That's kind of what I'm thinking. The free jazz albums, not really my mojo, number one. Yeah. Number two, just, again, the lines are just too jumpy or, like, super complicated that it's just, like, cleanly, the voice can't really do that. So I kind of tend to avoid, like, the more free jazz, modern jazz stuff, because it's just very melodic or easy to sing cleanly. Yeah. So,
I thought you meant, like, 90s stuff, but I guess you mean, like, free jazz.
No, yeah, not really 90, not like early. That was free jazz was what I was trying to.
Okay, spin. Gotcha.
Yeah. That kind of stuff I kind of don't really, listen to it much, to be honest. And also just, it's not really easy to sing.
Yeah, very angular too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And apparently you use YouTube to slow down. That's crazy. Like,
I do, yes.
It's terrible for that. Like,
I changed Jana Siegel's life because I did the interview with her. And she was like, wait a minute, there's a slowdown tool on YouTube. I was like, yeah, it's super helpful. It does kind of distort the sound a little bit. But it slows it down enough that if I listen to it on repeat at a slowish tempo without changing the key, that it works. So, and it's sure as hell more helpful than, like, downloading the file, putting it in some app, and then, you know, it's just there. So, it's a helpful tool for sure.
I wouldn't go that far. I hate slowing down things on YouTube. It's the distortion.
Oh, really?
Is terrible. Yeah, I'd rather just use, like, Transcribe or something.
Fair.
Yeah, it's terrible. And, like, all that stuff, is it kind of the same thing with Vocalese? Like, you know, all, like, kind of paying attention to phrasing, paying attention to, you know, scat syllables and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, with Vocalese, the solo has to be, like, it can't be all 30-second notes, otherwise no one's going to understand what the hell you're saying if you put lyrics to it. So, like, that's where, like, Cannonball and Dexter and those guys work really well, because you can put lyrics to it and have it, like, be understood. Mm-hmm. You know, and I did a great deal of Vocalese during the pandemic, and we kind of do a lot of different solos and write lyrics to it, which was really fun, and I still enjoy doing that a lot. But yeah, the more melodic, the better for that. Cause, you know, if it's a super fast solo, it doesn't really work too well with lyric. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever considered doing a Bright Size Life?
That's really funny you mentioned that. Yes. I was planning on doing that. Was delving into that song. Mm-hmm. Definitely awesome. More Pat Metheny to come.
Yeah. Oh, and then Pat Metheny Group, and then, like, Lyle Mays' solo on James on the live record. Man, killer.
Nuts. So yeah, good.
Wild. And also, there's this guy that comments on your videos sometimes, and then he was a Star Wars composer back in, like, the 2000s. And he did, like, music for the video games and stuff.
Wait, like, which person?
His name's Mark Grisky.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
He's like he's an older guy, but I was like, whoa, like, what is he doing here? Like, in the comments, like,
oh, that's so funny. I didn't even notice. That's really cool.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of his writing, orchestra writing and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Huh.
And there's another guy who, like, does FM synthesis for, like, Genesis chips and stuff. And he also comments sometimes, which is interesting.
Dang. I get so many comments on so many videos on my page, it's impossible to keep track.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I wish we would organize it better, but... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then even, like, Questlove, like, chimed in.
Oh, yeah. I did see that. That was cool. That was cool. I was like, oh, hey, thanks for coming by. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah,
a lot of cool people have commented, which is also fun.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of which, like, how do you deal with, like, all the voice stuff when, I guess, the voice is, like, a temperamental thing? Like, you can never really plan out how it's going to react on a certain day or a certain time. Mm-hmm. So, like, how do you find out, like, when you can or cannot execute an idea?
That's a good question. I mean, taking care of my body is really important. You know, look, I don't really ever warm up. I, like, never do, really. I just kind of know given my classical technique, I know how to healthily sing, so as to not hurt myself or damage my chords, especially if I have long span of shows or, like, a long show. I know how to, like, pace myself well with my training, which really comes in handy. I would say, I guess, just in the moment, especially when I'm improvising, I can kind of just feel how my voice sounds and like know if I need to like not sing as high, or, you know, when I'm starting to sing the melody or the head, like if I notice I have like, you know, phlegm or whatever in my voice or congestion or whatever, then I know what I can do and cannot do.
Right.
Just kind of, you know, as any singer does, like being aware of your voice and how you feel and what's happening in your throat, if you feel any tension or anything, to like not push, which, you know, you sometimes hear a lot of pop singers really, you can hear them damaging their voice because of how they push. And it's just, you see the strain or you see the veins like popping, like you just want to be like, no, stop. Like, you know, as once you have the training, you know, like what bad singing sounds like, and not like bad singing is like not talented, but you know, like like singing in a non-healthy way.
Right.
It's really easy to identify. So, knowing that about myself, just kind of feeling it in the moment, you know, and knowing when something feels comfortable or not, and just kind of not pushing past that boundary. So,
yeah. And I guess it depends on like the repertoire too. Like if you're,
yeah, exactly.
If you're transcribing and it's like, I got to take a break. Or
yeah,
if you're cold or whatever too.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Is it also kind of terrifying as a singer, you know, getting cold, like getting sick? Cause you know, COVID is like a thing.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I'm not really one of those singers that takes like throat coat or does like drops of whatever in my throat or like steaming.
Before. Yeah.
Not really. I don't really do that. I mean, when I was on tour with Postmodern Jukebox last summer, obviously I brought with me like a little steamer, cause that was a show a day, like a show every single day for 6 days in a row, but then off at that, you know, so that was a lot of singing for many months in a row. So, I mean, for something like that, then I would kind of like steam at night or like, you know, give my voice a little recovery treatment. But in terms of gigs here in the city, I don't really like do a lot of remedies. The most I would do, I guess, is if I'm feeling sick or under the weather, I'll get like tea and have honey or like take a spoonful of honey or something. Like super, you know, I don't want to put a lot of substances in my body before I sing, or like medicines, or, you know, there's so many vocal remedies now that it's just like, I don't really want to like experiment before I sing on something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like numbing my throat with throat coat. I go just more natural route. Like I know, again, I check in with my body, how I'm feeling. I know how to not hurt myself if I have a sore throat or something. And I know how to sing in a way that, you know, still sounds good, but doesn't overdo it.
Right.
Oh, you know, mostly that. I don't really fuss with a lot of different tools with when I'm feeling sick. And also just drinking water and getting enough sleep. And, you know, if it's cold out, wear a coat. Like, I, you know, just,
yeah.
Just kind of doing stuff that I know will prevent me from being sick. So,
right. Yeah. It's a bit weird because, like, you know, COVID happened and then it's like, you know, it, but the pandemic, like the sickness, the actual illness, it didn't actually go away, but it's like, it's still around and it's like, I don't know. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's I agree. Yeah. You can still get sick and like, so people don't really take it seriously. People don't really take getting sick seriously anymore. You don't want to be like a drunk about it either.
It's true. That's very true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bizarre. But I guess you have a greater sense of like, how it affects your body versus like, you know, pianists, where it's like your wrist, you're kind of using it per every day, whereas like you're speaking and singing, mm-hmm. that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nice. And I'm curious, like, are there any like specialized jam sessions in New York, like for like singers, like with singer tunes? Because I feel like singers have like a repertoire that instrumentalists don't really have.
Yeah. I would say Mesro is probably the best spot for vocalists. I mean, they have every Sunday they have the Polite Jam session, which is usually always hosted by a vocalist. So that's probably the most friendly spot for singers. Smalls isn't the best for singers just because it's always so loud in there. It's hard like sitting in with a band. It's just hard to be heard, not to any fault of the club, but just like, you know, it's just not the most like conducive environment for a singer. But you know, it's a good hang spot. I would say Mesro is probably the best for singers. And then I'm trying myself to start a little vocal friendly thing, at the Zinc Bar, I have a trial one coming up in May to try where, I curate, it's like a vocal showcase. So I curate like singers that are unknown on the scene or like up and coming, giving them a chance to perform because like I know when I was new on the scene, when I first moved here, I was looking for stuff to like, performance opportunities to be seen and heard. And, so I know how important that is. And I know that there's always this hidden divide between instrumentalists and singers. So it's like, giving singers a platform to be seen and people to hear them and come see them. So that's kind of what I'm trying to achieve with this little series, which I hope will get off the ground. We'll see how the first one goes. But I have a lot of great singers lined up who I personally know, some I went to school with and some who are brand new on the scene or some that aren't really in the jazz scene but love singing jazz. So, just giving them a chance to be heard, because I know how important that was for me. So I'm trying to like pay it back, so because there aren't a lot of sessions for us specifically for us. So that's also what I'm trying to get. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, because I feel like what I've seen, like the singer community in New York City seems pretty chill. Like they're pretty opening, like oh, pretty open. Yeah. And I think you're also super, you're a supervisor for an arts program.
Yeah, day job.
Nice.
Yeah, I work at a school down in Gramercy. I'm like the principal of the program basically, so I run the
Oh, yeah.
program. It's kindergarten through fifth grade, so that's a little more of the admin side job. I used to my first I've been there about 4 years now. My first year there, I was a teacher. I was a glee club teacher. I had like, a kindergarten class and like a second through fifth grade class. And we did like Broadway songs, which was really fun. But, I'm not teaching so much now. I'm more of just the admin side, business side of the program. But I enjoy it. It's a great job. Love working with kids. So,
Get
yeah.
a,
And the bills. So,
yeah, exactly. That's a plus. You know, that's an important
yeah,
thing.
exactly. Right. Yeah. We love money. Yeah.
What do you hope people get out of the, new Ella album when they check it out?
I hope that it just brings, obviously brings joy to people, brings new light to these songs that everyone knows and loves that Ella's done, showcasing my love for her and my inspiration from her. And yeah, I hope it draws people to Ella Fitzgerald who might not be familiar with her. Draws them to the standards, keeps them alive because the Great American Songbook is so important to keep that repertoire alive. So, yeah, all of the above. But I hope it brings people some joy too.
Yeah. If there's anyone who listens to it and they say, oh, I want to check out some more Ella Fitzgerald, where would you redirect them?
Oh man, any of her live albums. I always say this: I love her live albums because she was so funny with the crowd, like asking them for lyrics. Or forgetting the words and just making stuff up. Like she's so entertaining to listen to as a person. Ella Live at Zardy's is one of my favorite albums. She's just very funny with how she interacts with the audience. So it's a good chance to see her as a person too, and see what she was like. So any live album is my favorite.
I love the Joe Pass record. Even like the second one,
Yeah.
it's like just the singing and like, the I guess you could say maturity of like her voice and her phrasing
Very
and
naked. Yeah, it's very naked record, but it's even in her old age, she still sounds amazing.
And even the title is funny, like the second one, Ella and Joe Pass
Again.
again.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. It's funny. Yeah. That one.
Do you have any future gigs or any future projects coming up?
Yeah, I have some exciting ones coming up this summer. I'm gonna be on the West Coast with my band. In late July, some dates should be on my website already. And then in August, end of August, I'm taking a few members of my band to the UK. I'm making my debut at Ronnie Scott's in
Oh,
London, which is
nice.
really exciting. And then popping over across the pond to Paris for some shows again, which I love playing there. So yeah, super excited for that. So any Europe fans, UK fans should come on out. So.
Nice.
Gonna be fun summer.
You're gonna bring along Yoshi as a, travel buddy?
Yeah, right? I should bring him as a little friend on stage.
He'll protect your suitcases and everything.
Exactly. Yep.
He's your mic supervisor.
Yes. It's my security guard.
Well, thanks again for the interview.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was fun chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. Do you have any, tracks from Ella you want to play it with?
Why don't we close it out with a little Undecided?
Oh, nice. Some New York dating angst to end off the
Exactly.
day. Yeah.
Yes, yes,
Yep.
yes. Always.
Yep.
First you say you do, and then you don't. And then you say you will, and then you won't. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? And now you want to play, and then it's no. And when you say you'll stay, that's when you go. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? Well, I've been sitting on the fence, and it doesn't make much sense how you keep me in suspense, and you know it. Then you promise to return, then you don't, I really burn. Well, I guess I never learn, and I show it. Oh, if you've got a heart, and if you're kind, then don't keep us apart, make up your mind. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do?
Winnipeg, can you feel it? That restless, low burn chaos humming under everything. Mannequin Pussy turns it into something loud, beautiful, and impossible to ignore. Touring their explosive new record, I Got Heaven, they crash between searing punk and vulnerable pop, a full body release that's earned love from Pitchfork to NPR. Tickets available now through Ticketmaster. Come scream it out with Mannequin Pussy on Sunday, September 13th at the Burton Cummings Theater with local phenoms Show Pony opening the night, proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
The Casualties have always been pretty direct about it. fast, loud, and straight ahead. It's street punk at its core. No gloss, no reinvention, just an unrelenting intensity that's been carried across decades of shows and records. It's an evening of music built for shouting along, pushing forward, and not overthinking it. Yet somehow, it lands with the same urgency it always has. Joined by openers The Drowns and Rum Kicks, it's a night full of punk rock ferocity. Don't miss The Casualties as they hit the Park Theater April 26th at 7 p.m. Tickets are only $27.50 plus fees. Available now via ticketweb.ca. Punk legends The Casualties at Park Theater for one night only on April 26th. Brought to you by your friends at Moto Live and proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
Ron Paley has spent his career nurturing Winnipeg's jazz scene, and now the community is stepping up to build and sustain its future. The brand new Ron Paley Jazz Scholarship Fund is launching to support jazz students at the University of Manitoba's Desautels Faculty of Music, and the campaign kicks off at the Ron Paley Tribute Concert at the Burton Cummings Theatre on May 23rd. This celebration marks the start of a fund designed to help young musicians access the training, mentorship, and opportunities Ron has championed for decades. Your donation keeps that momentum going and helps the next generation find their voice. Whether you're joining the kickoff concert or supporting from home, you can donate today at give.umanitoba.ca/Ron Paley. Help fuel the future of jazz and keep Ron's impact growing. Proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
Thank you. Thank you. Expression of release.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? That music is so powerful.